And a very good morning to you. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, the webmaster, the frequent caller to the Scott Spears radio program, and someone who certainly wears many hats here at the famous and fabulous WWGH 107.1 FM, the talking place. Gosh, it's going to be a very newsworthy few days coming up as we transition into fall and the holiday season. And I think, like myself, you are very much looking forward to saying adios, auf Wiedersehen, goodbye, sayonara to 2020. Let's hope 2021 is a better year. We shall see. I don't want to predict too much because, you know, if I do predict something, the opposite is very likely to happen. Now, on this program, you never quite know what we're going to get into. I might have a guest, Dr. Feynman, our official presidentologist and political commentator. Might have someone who is very to the right of the spectrum of Ron, Mike Essen. He's been on a few times. He's been on with Scott, and I've been on his show, so we'll have him on at some time in the near future. May have my brother in broadcasting, Patrick Maruniak, an alumnus of the WNCI Morning Zoo, talking about life and other fun and fabulous stuff. He'll be on again soon. May have my friend David Ragsdale from South Carolina, talking about the great work that he does for the community and talking political activism, talking our opinion about whether or not masks work. You probably are aware of my own opinion. I might get into that during this show. You never really quite know. But what are we going to do today? We're going to go ahead and take a look at some of the more unusual news stories. We've done this in the past on this program, and we'll do it again today. The lighter side of the news, things that may tickle your funny bone once in a while. So let's go ahead and see what the quirky news boy or news girl or news person has for me on this wonderful fall morning. That's hard to say, fall morning here in the great mid-Ohio area. You probably know that, well, of course you know this. This was a huge story, one I've posted a lot about on Facebook. New York staff writer Jeffrey Toobin was suspended after he showed a little too much of himself on a work Zoom call. President Donald Trump's personal lawyer, former New York mayor, former presidential contender Rudy Giuliani, was caught on camera putting his hand somewhere you really shouldn't put your hand when you're on camera. And that was in front of a woman who believed he believed was a journalist, but was actually an actor, pranking him for Sacha Baron Cohen's new Borat movie. And last but not least, Fort Bragg's Twitter account had fired off a series of lewd tweets, which the Army base said were the result of a hack before the account was shut down altogether. All that on top of an already off-the-rails year of news. Calling this year of news off-the-rails is an understatement, but I would say it's accurate. Well, anyway, imaginations, as you can imagine, have been going crazy into overdrive. A record year for people and their conjecturing. So, The Independent, which you may have heard about, kind of an independent news source, sent out a cryptic tweet that NASA was set to make a major announcement about the moon. But the suspense proved a little too much for people to handle. You hear about the moon, the Space Force, well, that certainly wouldn't surprise me, as when it comes to the moon, you never quite know what people might think, especially as we approach Halloween. One gentleman said, NASA vague posting about the moon, as if we don't have enough to panic about right now. Wow, read the room. Another person, the moon has been suspended following a Zoom incident. The moon is dropping in OnlyFans. OnlyFans, that's becoming quite popular. A lot of my my younger social media friends are into OnlyFans. I don't have an OnlyFans, but I certainly know people that do, and hopefully they have fans and they're making some money, but this person thinks that the moon should get an OnlyFans, and I would say that I agree with that. Another person said, first of all, the moon didn't even know NASA's camera was on, and that would be in deference to the now infamous Mr. Jeffrey Toobin. This one here I can't really say on the radio, so we'll just pass on it. Another person said, scientist approaches podium. Good morning. Thank you for coming. After decades of research, we have found no correlation between the moon hitting your eye like a big pizza pie and Amore. You may remember that song. It was also a TV program, as I recall. When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's Amore. I think it's actually mood, but, you know, they kind of sound alike anyway. See, another person said, I kind of agree with this one. Reckon they found the Transformers living on the back of it or whatever. In response to the Independent saying NASA to make major announcement about the moon, independent.co.uk, with the rest of the URL. Now, for what it's worth, NASA's cryptic announcement about its exciting new discovery is related to its efforts to learn about the moon in support of deep space exploration. I think in 2020, exploring or maybe moving to the moon would be a good thing to do. Maybe I should start packing my bags right now. Of course, do they have radio on the moon? Will my cell phone work? I guess we'll have to wait and see about that one. The news release mentioned the Artemis program, which hopes to send the first female and next man to the moon in 2024 to prepare for human exploration of Mars as early as the 2030s. Mars in less than a generation. That'll be fun. Always wanted to take a visit to Mars. So, you know, in the year 2020, you never quite know what might be coming down the pike. It certainly has been an interesting year. One where surprises, one where, like my mama used to say, truth is stranger than fiction. My mom passed away, 93. Really miss her right now, because what would she think about all this stuff going on? We would be having some long conversations, and hopefully she's up in heaven there, pondering what's going on and thinking down to earth. Well, my son Adam, who's now, well, we're not going to mention my age, but certainly a much larger age than I was when she passed away in 93. He must have some, besides being in total shock and disbelief and at times disgust, he maybe must be having some of his own theories about what's going on and what will go on. And she would absolutely be right. I'll tell you that much right now. This isn't quite as light of a story, but I think it's one we do have to ponder, because this certainly has been in the news of late. And kind of gone back and forth as we weren't quite sure how serious it is. And that, of course, would be the murder hornets. You may have seen that the first nest of the so-called murder hornets, it's kind of hard to say, but with enough coffee, I think I could handle it. First nest here in the good old United States has been located, and scientists plan to wipe it out to protect native honeybees. And that was in Washington State. After weeks of searching, the agency said it found the nest of Asian giant hornets in Blaine, Washington State. That's near the Canadian border, north of Seattle. Bad weather delayed plans to destroy the nest several days ago. The world's largest hornet. Now, these murder hornets are 2 inches or 5 centimeters, and that's quite large. They are invasive. They can decimate entire hives of honeybees and deliver painful stings to human beings. I would imagine with a 2-inch hornet, that isn't bunk. Farmers in the northwestern United States depend on honeybees to pollinate many crops, including two of my favorite and two of the most nutritious things that you can eat, raspberries and blueberries. Get very healthy and low calorie, and I love berries and always enjoy buying them, especially when they're on sale. So the fact that these hornets could essentially destroy and increase the prices of valuable crops like blueberries and raspberries. That's serious. Now, despite their nickname, Murder Hornets, that's a pretty strong name. And, of course, all this hype that you're hearing about. It's been a lot of hype in 2020, but that's kind of how we roll in the age of social media. Fears have been stirred in a obviously bleak year. But good news in terms of people, the hornets kill maybe a few dozen people a year in Asian countries. And experts say it's probably less. But they're still ugly buggers for sure. Meanwhile, hornets, wasps, and bees, typically found here in the United States, kill an average of 62 people a year, according to the CDC. So they don't really kill people any more than other stinging insects do. 62, well, one death is too many, of course, but 62, that's not that many. And with the honeybees being at risk and therefore some valuable crops, that's a much bigger concern. Not sure how else to say that. But I tell you, see one of these killer hornets and you're going to freak out. I certainly would. The real threat from Asian giant hornets, again, is how they attack honeybees. That's where the risk really is. And honeybees are also under siege from mites, diseases, pesticides, and loss of food. You know, honeybees, they can sting. They're a little creepy, but they're extremely valuable. And we shouldn't be killing them. Don't be afraid of them, because I understand some can be aggressive. For most people, the sting isn't something that's going to cause a very serious medical condition. Some people are allergic. I think I was stung once, and it wasn't pretty. But again, they're more afraid of you than you are of them, and they're very valuable. So we do have to coexist with them. It's kind of a tricky problem because they freak me out, believe me. I don't like them buzzing around my garden or even if I find them in my house. But we do need to have them, so we need to coexist with them. Problem with these hornets, they're invasive. They are destructive. A group of them can kill an entire honeybee hive in just a few hours. And that's kind of the problem. And they're not intelligent. You know, they're really kind of stupid. They don't look too smart, and they are true to their appearance. We can tell people don't swat them, don't try to kill them, don't be afraid of them, don't kill them with pesticides, but we can't tell that to a hornet. And that obviously is, and that's the real problem. This nest that was found in northwestern Washington State caught two of the large hornets in a trap recently. Two more living hornets were captured in another trap, according to the agency. Using dental floss, entomologists were able to attach radio trackers to three hornets, the second of which led them to the discovery of the nest, according to agriculture officials. The nest was found inside the cavity of a tree on private property, according to the agriculture department. Dozens of the hornets were seen buzzing in and out of the tree. The property owner has graciously given permission for agency staff to eradicate the nest and remove the tree if needed. Now, scientists have been searching for nests since the first Asian giant hornets were caught earlier in 2020. The first confirmed detection of the hornet in the United States was December of last year near Blaine, Washington, and the first hornet was trapped in July of 2020. Almost two dozen have been caught so far, all in Whatcom County. The invasive insect is normally found in China, Japan, Thailand, South Korea, Vietnam, and other parts of Asia. Officials have said it's not known how it arrived in North America. Washington State and the Canadian province of British Columbia are the only places the hornets have been found on the North American continent. So, bottom line with the murder hornets, they can kill people, but that's very rare. They do kill valuable honeybees, and that means that there will be a shortage, if it becomes a real serious problem, a shortage of valuable foods and special personal favorites of mine, like blueberries and raspberries. So I think the murder part has been hyped. Of course, we've seen a lot of hyping of stuff this year. But the problem is that they kill honeybees. And again, they aren't very bright, so telling them not to kill the honeybees, well, I don't think that that's going to work. So hopefully that will stimulate a brain cell or two, and we will move on. This is Mid-Morning Coffee Break, which sometimes is merged, I guess, with the Adam the Computer Guy radio program here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial in the great Mid-Ohio city of Marion. And you can listen online anywhere in the world, maybe even on the moon if you have internet access, at WWGH1071.com. Well, let's talk more about insects, bugs. Why not? If it bugs you, well, I guess you can always listen to something else. But I tell you, this news is interesting. Insects are really fascinating, and we can learn so much from them. Check this out, boys and girls. It is a beetle that can withstand bird pecks, animal stomps, and even being rolled over by a Toyota Camry. Now, scientists are studying what the bug's crash-resistant shell could teach them about designing stronger planes and buildings. Pablo Zavattieri is a civil engineer from Purdue University. And when I went to college, I studied chemistry, as you probably know, but did admire greatly civil and mechanical structural engineers, as they come up with these theories based upon their research and knowledge, and they are so innovative. And the way they can help the world is unfathomable. So if a renowned civil engineer says something, I will tend to listen. So anyway, the civil engineer Pablo Zavattieri, which is a cool name anyway, he's from nearby Purdue University, said the beetle is super tough. He was among a group of researchers that ran over the insect with a car as part of a new study. Remember that? This little beetle being run over by a car. Not a beetle, not a Volkswagen beetle. I guess you could do that, but it was a Toyota. So how does this seemingly indestructible insect do that, you might ask? Again, beetles aren't very big. The species, which is called, I bet rather appropriately, the diabolical ironclad beetle, owes its strength to an unusual armor that is layered and pieced together like a jigsaw, according to Zavattieri's study there in nearby Purdue. It was published recently in the journal Nature. And the design of this beetle, they say, could help inspire more durable structures and vehicles. To understand what gives the inch-long beetle its strength, researchers first tested how much squishing it could take. The species, which can be found in Southern California's woodlands, withstood, check this out, this beetle could withstand compression of about 39,000 times its own weight. So if you're a 200-pound human, that would be like surviving a crush of 7.8 million pounds. Could you imagine being crushed by something weighing 7.8 million pounds? That's proportionately what a beetle can handle. And that is truly amazing. And the way that that can be applied to research in everyday life, you can imagine. So quite fascinating. Other local beetle species shattered under one-third as much pressure. That's still a lot, though. You're still talking over a ton for a 200-pound man, proportionately. Researchers then used electron microscopes and CT scans to examine the beetle's exoskeleton and figure out what made it so strong. As is often the case for flightless beetles, the species Elytra, E-L-Y-T-R-A, a protective case that normally sheaths wings, that's almost impossible to say. But anyway, it is a protective case around this beetle. It had strengthened and toughened over time. They've evolved. The beetle got very tough, very durable, able to withstand a large amount of pressure. Up close, scientists realize that this cover also benefited from special jigsaw-like bindings and a layered architecture. When compressed, they found the structure fractured slowly instead of snapping all at once. Zavatiri said, when you pull them apart, it doesn't break catastrophically. It just deforms a little bit. That's crucial for the beetle. It could also be useful for engineers who design aircraft and other vehicles with a variety of materials like steel, plastic, and plaster. Currently, engineers rely on pins, bolts, welding, and adhesives to hold everything together. But those techniques can be prone to degrading. In the structure of the beetle's shell, nature offers an interesting and elegant alternative. Because the beetle-inspired design fractures in a gradual and predictable way, cracks could be more reliably inspected for safety. And that's according to Po Yu Chen, an engineer at Taiwan's National Tsinghua University, not involved in this research. The beetle study is part of an $8 million project funded by the United States Air Force to explore how the biology of creatures such as mantis shrimp and bighorn sheep could help develop impact-resistant materials. A co-author of this Purdue study, David Kisilas, he's a materials scientist and engineer. He's at the University of California in Irvine. He said, we're trying to go beyond what nature has done. The research is the latest effort to borrow from the natural world to solve human problems. And that comes from Rhode Island. Brown University evolutionary biologist Colin Donahue. He was not involved in the study. Velcro, which is quite amazing. It just sticks together so well and is useful in many things. You may have, and I knew this, but you might have heard about this. It was inspired by the hook-like structure of plant burrs. These plants that you're out gardening and they kind of stick to your clothing and you have to pick them off. That's kind of like how Velcro works. Artificial adhesives took a page from super clingy gecko feet. Colin Donahue again from Brown University in Rhode Island said, endless other traits found in nature could offer insight. These are adaptations that have evolved over millennia. So some fascinating research. Again, beetles. There are some strong, tough creatures, and we can learn a lot from them. And it's fascinating how these seemingly simple and certainly not intelligent creatures can help the world so much. It fascinates me, and hopefully learned a little bit. I know our official nature, what would the word be? Nature expert, Mr. James Anderson, he listens to the show. So, James, hopefully you found that as fascinating as I did. And feel free to leave me a comment, email, or other communication. We'd be very interested in what you have to think about this. You know, we are in pumpkin season, and I like eating pumpkins. They're healthy. They're a type of squash and taste better than a lot of other squash. They make good pies, pie filling. We have pumpkin spice, which flavors so many different things this time of the year. Let's go to Minnesota, where it's probably cold and snowing right now. Being cooped up at home due to the current world situation. Paid handsomely for a horticulture teacher in Minnesota who used the extra time to constantly water and feed a massive pumpkin, which has won this year's Half Moon Bay Pumpkin Contest in California. Travis Ginger of Anoka, Minnesota, spent a lot of his free time in the pumpkin patch in his backyard, watering his plants up to 10 times a day and feeding and fertilizing them at least twice a day. He's 40 years old. He drove his gargantuan gourd, his not puny pumpkin, his enormous pumpkin, 35 hours from California all the way to South Moon Bay, he drove it from Minnesota to California. I'm getting confused, but I guess a large pumpkin can do that to you. Anyway, he drove about 35 hours from Minnesota to Half Moon Bay, just south of San Francisco in California. And why did he drive that long? Well, it's the 47th World Championship Pumpkin Weigh-Off. So how much did this enormous pumpkin weigh, you might ask? Well, over a ton, 2,350 pounds. You could eat pumpkin pie for a very long time. It was nerve-wracking, according to Travis Ginger, because with every bump on the road, I kept thinking, is it going to make it? And then finally, it got weighed. It was the last one. And oh my goodness, it's been incredible. And he won the contest on October 12th. Looking at a picture of this pumpkin, this is definitely a large pumpkin, and I could probably feed my entire neighborhood for a long time if they enjoyed pumpkin food as much as I do. So what kind of work does Travis Ginger do? He's a horticulture and landscape teacher. Not surprising, because landscaping skills, gardening, your yard, knowing how to water and take care of things, and of course horticulture, that certainly are skills that someone who would want to grow a large pumpkin would be good to have them. He's at Anoka Technical College. He's been growing pumpkins since he was a teenager. He was inspired by his father, who also grew them. It was his first time competing at the Half Moon Bay Way Off, but he's not sure he'll be back next year. He said, I might need a year off from the work and the nerves and everything. The first time pumpkin champ. You might wonder, was it worth driving all the way from Minnesota to California? Well, I would say that it was, because he won $16,450, or $7 per pound. So I would say, unless his car gets really bad gas mileage, that he came out ahead. Plus, of course, he's famous. And that picture is quite cool. It's a rather lumpy pumpkin, but it is over a ton nonetheless, and Travis certainly deserved said victory. Now, this was the second heaviest ever weighed at the 40-year-old California event, but it was still far from a U.S. record. The record was set 2 years ago when a grower in New Hampshire produced a pumpkin weighing more than 2,500 pounds. So close, but not the heaviest. The record for the heaviest pumpkin in the world was set in 2016 at the Giant Pumpkin European Championship in Ludwigsburg, Germany. A Belgian grower's winning whopper, not the hamburger, but the whopper of a pumpkin, came in at just over 2,600 pounds. So you think the pumpkins that you get at Kroger or Walmart are large. Folks, they ain't nothing compared to these biggies. And I tell you, I admire these people for their perseverance in growing these foods. And hopefully they will be eating pumpkin pie and other pumpkin delicacies for a very long time. Let's get back to the animal kingdom. And another kind of animal which has always fascinated me. They are kind of yucky and creepy, but, you know, it's Halloween season, so why not? Andrew Orkin. Kind of an appropriate name because Orkin is a pest control company, but I'm not sure he's related to those Orkins. Anyway, he was taking a break from his evening jog to sit by Prospect Park Lake. And that's in New York State, when he turned around and was startled to see a tangle of wriggling snakes and quite a big pile, fully alive, he said. He's a music composer who lives near the park. That's in Brooklyn in New York City, which is, of course, also part of New York State. They turned out to be eels that had escaped from one of two large plastic bags that split open as a man dragged them to the shoreline. After dumping the eels in the lake, the man walked away, explaining to bystanders that I just want to save lives. And that release of eels was illegal. It became a curiosity on social media. But the dumping of exotic animals in urban parks is not new. In cities across the country, non-native birds, turtles, fish, and lizards have settled into and often disturbed local ecosystems. New Yorkers free thousands of non-native animals every year. Many of them abandon pets that quickly will die, but others can survive. They can even reproduce and end up causing lasting harm. Jason Munchie South is an urban ecologist at Fordham University in the Bronx in New York City, which is also New York State. He said, people like animals, and they sometimes think they're doing a good thing by letting them go. Most will die. Some will become a problem, and then there is no going back. New York State and city officials say it's too soon to know how the eels in Prospect Park might affect local species. But based on photos taken by bystanders, officials identified them as swamp eels that are native to Southeast Asia, like those that have been found in at least 8 states. Once introduced, often after being purchased at local live fish markets, the eels eat almost anything, including plants, insects, crustaceans, frogs, turtles, and other fish. And they could prey upon or compete with the park's native species for however long they survive. That's according to Katrina Toll, Deputy Director for New York City Department of Parks and Recreation's Wildlife Unit. There are no plans to eradicate the eels since they're nocturnal and spend most of their time burrowed in the sediment of lakes, rivers, and marshes. Spotting and removing them from the lake could be impossible. This kind of species is a little tricky. They're well hidden. We're not going to go out there and try to trap any of them. Again, that's from Katrina Toll, Deputy Director of the New York City Department of Parks and Recreation's Wildlife Unit. Without having witnessed the release, officials from the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation, which is investigating the incident, could not specify the number of eels released. Bystanders describe seeing more than 100 of them. Officials say they will look for swamp eels during the agency's next survey in the spring of 2021, but don't expect to make it through the winter. Nicholas Mandrak is a freshwater ecologist from the University of Toronto. He said even if they don't survive, they could have negative short-term impacts. If some Prospect Park transplants survive for a few years, climate change could feasibly warm up city waters enough to render them hospitable for swamp eels. We shouldn't come to an immediate conclusion because they're found in Asia. They couldn't survive in New York City. The exotic species previously has shown up in western New York State's Hemlock and Canadas Lakes. And that's much closer to mid-Ohio. And that was in 2019, and Queens in Meadow Lake 3 years ago. Biologists have found Asian swamp eels in waterways in several other states, and the closest being Michigan and Pennsylvania. New York City has a long history of people introducing exotic species into its parks. In 1890, Shakespearean enthusiasts released a flock of about 60 European starlings in Central Park that grew into a current population of hundreds of millions nationwide that outcompete native birds, destroy crops, and occasionally snarl jet engines. So just watch what animals you release, especially in somewhere densely populated like New York City. Interesting news and important news here on The Talking Place, WWGH Radio.
Do you ever ponder? Do you ever wonder? Do you ever question? Did my server serve me? Your computer will print. Should you call the president? What in the world are you gonna do? Call Adam, the computer guy. Call Adam. Don't know the reason why. Do you find it a waste of time? Because you cannot get online. Call Adam, the computer guy. Or go online at thecomputerguy.com. There's a click of the mouse.
Oh yes, the great or maybe slightly infamous Adam the Computer Guy theme tune sung by the late Paul Savage, such an important member of our station as we were launching the programming, and his legacy lives on and will be with us for a long time. He did so many great theme songs including that one, which was he was so kind to compose, although I helped him compose some of the words and some of the feel of the song. And we play that regularly, just for fun and for some slight informational and educational purposes. Adam Lepp here on Mid-Morning Coffee Break, and the Adam the Computer Guy radio program, heard multiple times during the week here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial, and broadcasting online anywhere in the great world we live in, on the internet at WWGH1071.com. Today we are doing something we've done in the past for fun and also for educational purposes, looking at some of the more unusual and sometimes lighter news stories that we're coming across here in the fall of 2020. It's certainly been a challenging time for all of us. Most news has certainly not been good, certainly not been anything to laugh about, but as I say, laughter is the best medicine. And no matter how bad the state of the world or your life is, and I speak from my own experience now and in the past and certainly in the future, laughter certainly is the best medicine. You need to laugh a little bit, not take everything too seriously, and allow humor to help us get through these very, very tough times. So what's going on in the Rocky Mountain state of Colorado, state that has some very changeable weather? Several weeks ago, they had a snowstorm, literally a day after the temperature was around 90. So if you like weather surprises and you think Ohio has that, and we do, you ain't see nothing till you visit parts of the Rocky Mountain area. Jared Polis, the Democratic governor of the great state of Colorado, has recently signed an executive order granting full pardons to people who have been convicted of possession of an ounce or less of marijuana. And Colorado has had legalized marijuana for quite a while. So very logical, and I think a good step. I'm in favor. I'm in favor of legalization. Doesn't mean that I think you should use it, but as a consenting adult, I think people should make their own decisions. And that's what America's all about, independence, making our own intelligent decisions, living our lives, but doing it responsibly. The order says all individuals previously convicted in a state of Colorado of a petty offense, misdemeanor, or felony for possession of 1 ounce or less, which is quite a bit of marijuana. You can smoke a lot of marijuana and an ounce. Anyway, possession of an ounce or less of marijuana under the following provisions are hereby granted a full and conditional pardon for that conviction. The pardon takes immediate effect, and it affects over 2,700 people who've been convicted of the low-level crime, according to the Denver Post. The pardon convictions date as far back as 50 years ago, and as recently as late 2012. It's been 8 years. You know, time flies, but it's been a while. And Colorado really set a precedent for other states. Voters approved Amendment 64, which legalized the possession and consumption of weed in the state. It's ridiculous, according to Governor Polis in a statement, how being written up for smoking a joint in the 70s has followed some Coloradans throughout their lives and gotten in the way of their success. Too many Coloradans have been followed their entire lives by a conviction for something which is no longer a crime, and these convictions have impacted their job status, housing, and countless other areas of their lives. I don't agree with the governor on some things, like his restrictions that have been put in, as well as ones in Denver, but I do agree with the governor on this. It's okay, you know, we can agree to disagree. Like I think almost every politician, I will take issue with some of their stances and some of their proclamations, declarations, and enacted legislation, but I'll also commend them for some good things, and this certainly would be in that latter category. Ricardo Baca, he is the former marijuana editor, the Denver Post, their former marijuana editor. How about that, having a marijuana editor That's your job on a newspaper. That sounds like a pretty fun job. Well, he now runs the cannabis marketing firm called Grasslands. Certainly an appropriate name. Anyway, he said that Colorado is lucky to have a governor who understands that the responsibilities of legalizing cannabis go far beyond regulating the cultivation, manufacture, and retail of marijuana. It's the responsibility of every legal economy to also put an end to the drug war era nonsense that has ruined untold lives, and granting pardons to citizens with low-level drug offenses should be a mandatory element of all legalization efforts moving forward. Governor Polis signed a bipartisan bill last June, which authorized him to grant pardons to those convicted of possession of up to 2 ounces of marijuana. But the recent executive order only applies to those convicted of possessing an ounce or less. But again, an ounce of marijuana, that's still quite a bit. And again, I do commend the governor for doing that. Definitely a good thing to do, especially considering everything else going on in 2020. And we can move forward and not worry about what is, in almost every case, a victimless crime. And if it's even a crime, that's even debatable. Jimmy Carter, the former president who's pushing 100 years old, still alive, still an influence, an elder statesman. You know, he had a bit of a challenging presidency, but I think as a former president, he's done quite a bit of good. He's come clean about a delicate situation on the White House roof during his administration. So what do you think happened? One of his sons smoked pot there one night on the White House roof in 1978. With a very well-known pot smoker, the legendary singer-songwriter Willie Nelson. Jimmy Carter bared the truth in a new documentary, Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President. Willie Nelson, who's 87 years old, revealed in his autobiography that he smoked a Fat Austin torpedo that night, but didn't mention Carter's son. When Willie Nelson wrote his autobiography, he confessed that he smoked pot in the White House one night when he was spending the night with me. And according to former President Jimmy Carter, Carter said that his companion that shared pot with him was one of the servants in the White House. That's not exactly true. It actually was one of my sons, which he didn't want to categorize as a pot smoker like him. It's no secret Willie Nelson does enjoy weed, and maybe that's why he's 87 years old and still a well-known, talented musician. Who knows? Certainly up for debate. There were rumors at the time about Nelson and Carter's middle son, James Earl Carter III, who goes by Chip, sharing the aforementioned indulgence. But Chip Carter said in an interview in 2015 that Willie Nelson told me not to tell anybody. When asked again if his smoking partner that night was Chip, Willie Nelson said, looked a lot like, could have been, yeah. I guess we'll never know. But an interesting story, nonetheless. Asked if he would be worried. It would be embarrassing to former President Jimmy Carter. Willie Nelson said, I think he knew me and he knew Chip, so you know, there wasn't much we could do to embarrass him. I would say, considering the things that go on in the White House now, embarrassing and otherwise, having a famous musician smoke a joint with your son is very, very small potatoes, to put it mildly. Almost time to wrap up this program. This has been a lot of fun, interesting news about the animal kingdom, about former indulgences going on in the White House, and just a little bit, and some other stuff, just to pepper this interesting program and certainly keep my interest and I guess make you as a listener wonder, what's Adam going to do next? We'll find out next time we get together here on The Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 FM. Where I invite you to email me on our famous private email server, adam@wwgh1071.com.